and Condon.
Ken Miller. Trent Condon. Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO. And now on 106.3 FM.
All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Miller and Condon on a Thursday, Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. Trent Condon, Ken Miller, to talk sports with you for the next couple of hours. Thanks for tuning in here this morning. Here's what's coming up on the BMW of Des Moines guest list in the first hour of the program, bottom of this hour, 10:30, David Eicholt on the Hawkeyes. Get the latest. Of course, he was part of that media scrum. We will get his takeaways. We got John Bowen Camps a couple of days ago. Today, David Eicholt will opine on what he heard. At 11:05, we'll go to Dallas, where Chris Williams is at Big 12 Media Days. This will precede Matt Campbell's appearance on the stage. I think the Iowa State head coach goes at 11:35, so we'll pick Chris's brain, what he heard from the commissioner in waiting, etc., and some of the coaches and players that have, up until he joins us, see what he's heard and learned and speculating about from Dallas Big 12 Media Days. Chris Williams, Cyclone Fanatics, and here, of course, KXNO will join us at 11:05. And then we're going to talk some football with Nick Athan on those Kansas City Chiefs. A lot of sports operators are putting out their odds to win the division, etc. Are the Chiefs a cinch? I'm not sure they are. We'll pick Nick's brain on that. I'm sure he's got a question or an opinion, rather, or two on the Big 12 as well, as he follows that pretty closely. He's still convinced Kansas is not going to get a chance this time around, but he thinks that's ultimately they'll end up at some point. I'm not so sure.
I wonder if he golfs in the same circles as John Miller. Maybe that's the...
Does John feel the same way?
Well, that was last year, last summer, when everybody was saying that was going to be the end game, and I tried to tell him they're wrong.
John lives in that area.
Oh, he does.
He had great seats for the Royals game, him and his daughter the other night. Did you see that?
Yeah, right. Second row, right behind the Tigers dugout.
Good for John Miller, yes. Living life with his daughter, so good for him. So we got to have him on at some point.
That's a good call.
During the build-up to football. So yesterday, of course, the British Open is going on. Baseball was crazy yesterday. I couldn't find the Twins and the Brewers for the life of me.
And you still didn't know about it until this morning.
I had no idea. I thought, yeah, the perfect way to spend the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And it would have been a fun way to watch, especially the way it turned out in dramatic fashion. As Hader, boy, he's had those moments this year.
Every once in a while, right? Uh-huh. But he writes himself very quickly, too. Even if he has a couple of shaky performances in a row, you don't feel like it's going to last. And he gets right back to the same guy. But Miranda got one over the plate, and he demolished
it. Did he? I didn't see the home run. So he wasn't cheated at all?
This wasn't into the first row of the left field bleachers. No, this was into the second deck. Wow. It was crushed. Three-run bomb as the Twins walk it off. But yeah, it wasn't... No Bally Sports North or Bally Sports Wisconsin or FS1 or MLB Network or ESPN. No, this was the YouTube game of the week.
There's so many different outlets. So I settled on the Braves and the Mets in the afternoon. It's a great list. You know, I've told you a million times how much I like the Mets broadcast, but that wasn't much of a game as well. I thought the Cardinals were about to put one in the win column. We'll get to that in a second. That didn't go well. I watched last night, and I couldn't have been in. I picked the right game to watch. I watched the White Sox and the Guardians. And by the way, how old is Steve Stone?
Steve Stone is 72.
He's 75 today.
Oh, 75 today. I was close.
75 years old.
That wouldn't get me a point, though, in Murph and Andy Guess Who's Birthday.
I don't know
the
rules.
You got to be within 2 years.
Do you have to be?
I missed it by three.
How many more birthdays? I mean, they've been doing this for a long time.
Right, exactly.
Haven't they run out of people to guess? I mean, doesn't the audience have these memorized? Because they're loyal.
A year later, you kind of forget. Right. How old is that guy?
Yeah. Wait, I should know this.
Right.
But yes, Steve Stone, 75 years old today, and still, and we talked about it yesterday, you learned the game listening to Steve Stone, or one of them, certainly, one of the influences on your sporting life growing up, and still so good. I mean, so good. Cy Young, when did he win Cy Young? 72, 73?
Is that what, yeah.
Early 70s with the Orioles. But I was, I mean, I guess he's 75, right? If you're pitching in the majors in the 70s, you know, you're in your 20s at that point, and we all getting older, but good for him. I hope he keeps going. That's one for Cappy next week. That's a file away for Cap.
Right, that's a good
call. Just Because I'll miss him when he's gone. He's been great on the both the Chicago broadcast. The game itself was terrific. Giolito, the bullpen for the White Sox, was outstanding in that baseball game. Liam Hendricks comes in and shuts the door down. The White Sox, now they get away. As bad as it started that series in Cleveland, they get out with a split. Eloy Jimenez goes down again.
Yes.
What do you have to do with him? Is playing in the outfield
too much?
Almost seems like it, right?
But you don't have a whole lot of flexibility with that team and the way that they're built. You know, Bray is still over there at first base, but you want to DH him from time to time, get him as much rest.
Maybe.
It's too early in the career to make him a full-time DH.
I think so.
Isn't it?
And does he hit enough? I mean, when he hits them, they stay hit.
Absolutely.
But is he either, I guess, I mean.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
There's some bad DHs around baseball. You can definitely live with that guy. But anymore, so many teams want that flexibility. The NBA is obviously the biggest factor when it comes to load management, right?
Right.
And guys taking days off seemingly whenever they want.
Yeah.
And then we'll get to the playoffs and then we'll be able to play. MLB is not at that level, but obviously I look at the Twins. And Byron Buxton, you don't want him at this point playing center field six times a week.
Nope.
So you're going to DH him and you're going to move guys around and you're going to get guys still out there. You're still going to try to get them their 600 at-bats a year, but you're going to do it in a way where you utilize that DH. The days of Don Baylor just being your DH and you lock him in for 160 games, those days are over. And because of that, you know, what is the market for? Let's say it turns out to be that, where Jimenez is just, he is a DH only. We're not even going to mess around with him in the field. At this point in his career, yeah, he might be able to hit for the next 10 or 12 years, but do you really want to lock yourself into that? And what's the price tag that would ultimately
be attached to? Well, he's an adventure in left field to begin with.
Yes, he is.
I mean, he took one off his you-know-what yesterday, laying down almost as the ball looked as though it was going to get over his head. Now, he made the play to his credit, but boy, it was anything but a thing of beauty. So a good win for them yesterday. Bad loss for the Cardinals as they had the Dodgers in a big way. So after the Guardians and the White Sox had finished things up, I didn't even bother going back to the Cardinals because I thought it was, you know, fait accompli that they're going to be able to knock off these Dodgers. So I watched The Great Imposter.
We talked about that the other day, yeah.
Barry Bremen. If you grew up if you're my age, if you're in the 50s, you probably saw this guy, The Great Imposter, sneaking into baseball games. He's at the Super Bowl as an umpire, or maybe as a side jet, whatever. He's got the stripes on. He dressed up as a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader. He made his mistake. You know what his final act was?
No.
That ended his almost enough's enough? He came on the stage to accept an Emmy Award, and the winner was actually walking up to the stage when there he is jumping onto the stage and giving his acceptance speech. And that, not sports, not dressing up in a Kansas City Kings uniform in an All-Star game and shooting layups or doing all the other stuff that he does, shagging fly balls, etc., at All-Star games in Major League Baseball. But it was when he accepted the Emmy Award. But that's not where the story ends.
Yeah.
And I had no idea until you told me the other day that what I was going to see.
So the story in itself, in fact, it was one of the E60 shorts that they had done about this guy before. But then there's the second layer, and is what turns it into a hour-long episode.
Hour and a half. It was 90 minutes, and I had no idea about this, and you floored me when you told me that. So because I'd known about The Great Imposter and all the stuff he'd done, and he's on Johnny Carson, who was a big name in my generation.
Mine too.
Really?
Yeah, Johnny.
Okay.
That was big when you got to stay up late and watch Johnny Carson.
Johnny Carson, of course, Letterman, and then the fame that came his way. I think he did Roy Firestone's show on ESPN. That was really ahead of his time, that Firestone show.
Yes,
what was the name of it?
Up Close.
Up Close, yes. Good memory on you. Up Close with Roy Firestone. Anyways, so all of the sports stuff is one thing. Take that, frame it, put it over on one side of the paper. And then we find out, in the era that we're in, DNA testing is such a big part of things. And he got, all of a sudden, there's a bunch of people throughout the country that are doing these DNA tests. And one of them is a genealogy nurse or does something like this. Anyway, They got on the case to try and find out who their father was. And all of a sudden, these people from that are taking these, what's the one called? 123 or something?
23andMe.
23andMe, thank you. 23andMe. 123. Add an extra one. So they're taking these tests, and all of a sudden, they're all connected to somehow. They're half siblings. And then they dig in to try and find out who this is, because Bremer, Barry, was a sperm donor in the 60s and 70s.
Was this a way to make money, did they say?
They said that was potentially part of it, but what we come to find out is back in these days, these clinics are only, well, they were supposed to only use the same donation no more than five times.
Makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
And that may have been the case at that one, but then they take this sample and they send it to other clinics around the country.
Oh. So you don't have a bunch of siblings in
the
one
same
city.
Area. Yeah. Although there's a lot of them in Michigan. And the story just takes off from there. And I'm not going to spoil any more of it for you. If you've got it on DVR.
I do.
I'll be honest with you. I'm always honest with you. I was left wanting more.
Really?
It's not a terrible ending by any means. It's a happy ending. Mm-hmm. It's a happy ending. I mean, everybody finds each other, and they and his family, that the three kids that didn't know that dad and mom had, you know, agreed to do this in the 60s and 70s. It's a good ending. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Watch the show. All right, so we're watching a show. It's not the Tiger Woods show.
No, not at all.
Unless you like car wrecks, that type of entertainment. Boy, he's off to a terrible start, Trent. He's three over. He double bogeyed the first hole. I didn't see the first. Saw him on the second. We're watching the USA Network without the sound, so it's kind of a little bit difficult. But what happened to his start?
Hit a good drive on one, went into a divot. And then tried to chunk it up there. That didn't happen. Double bogey. Then he hits a great drive. Pars two, three. Great drive. Another great drive. Just an absolute beauty. A little bit further left than they thought off the tee, but it rolled into a spot, and it is dry.
Yes.
Out on this course. If you haven't seen it yet, folks.
It's a beautiful shade of brown.
Yes, it is. It is incredibly dry, even for their standards over there. And it just kept rolling and rolling. At a great spot, kind of coming in at a weird angle to the pin, but as a pitch shot. He left it 20 yards short.
Jeez.
And then he has to have a pretty easy pitch, but there's one spot you can't put it. Right at the top of it.
Kidding.
And what does he do?
He put it there.
Puts it right on top. Misses the par putt coming back. Bogeys that. So that's where we are with Tiger right now. He is three over. Your leader, we got it, right? Cameron.
You got the wrong Cameron.
Oh, Cameron Young.
But I think when it's all said and done, I'm not sure. So here's Cameron Young's story. His last six rounds of golf, he's a combined 30 over par.
What?
Today he goes out and shoots 8 under at the British Open.
This is a pretty solid player, too. I mean, this isn't some of the names that sometimes pop up. He's top 30 in the world. I think he's 18th this year in the PGA Tour.
Didn't make the cut last week at the Scottish Open.
Well, look at Morikawa last year. Morikawa was brutal in that event. Said he didn't know how to putt on these greens, and he goes out and wins the British Open a week later.
So, and that's what he said in his interview afterwards, too, is just the experience that he got, albeit, you know, not as long as he wanted. He only got to 36 holes out of it. But that's what he said. Putting the greens and the links golf set him up for today. But 30 over in his last six rounds of golf and come out and do this today, I mean, my gosh.
Unthinkable.
But Rory McIlroy was terrific, and he's right on his heels. And you mentioned we both have a Cameron. We both have Cameron Smith, and he was what? I think he's 5 under, finished his round.
Yep.
But the leaderboard's got a chance to be really good. Scottie Scheffler in the hunt. Xander Schauffele is in the hunt. At least they were last time I checked. Bryson DeChambeau is having himself a day.
Yeah, he was 3 under at last check. He's
finished
really
3
good.
Under.
Yep. That's where he finished. Yep. So he finished with the 69. Him and Xander, they're tied for 10th right now.
Poulter's a LIV Golf player too, correct?
Yes.
And he's 3 under. So LIV Golf making it, and Lee West was on the LIV Tour.
This is a pretty good leaderboard early on.
Right? He's 4 under.
You got some intriguing names. You got some names you know. You got the LIV part that really was a non-equity as it pertained to the U.S. Open. Mm-hmm. All those guys stunk that week. Not the case, at least early on here. So
I wonder if there's more pressure coming in for in a lot of their cases back to their home country, knowing that maybe a little bit more the criticism may, I don't know, sink in a little, whatever.
Right.
Just back in the States. More pressure.
I can buy that.
Yeah, being over there, they're playing well for whatever reason. They're playing well over there.
So some good names at the top of the leaderboard, but Rory, he was excellent. And when he gets off to a start like this, and this is why I liked him so much coming into it, this is not a difficult course the way it's playing. The wind is not going to blow. It doesn't sound like really maybe a shift in direction tomorrow afternoon.
That's Was that what it is? Yeah. Was there a sports operator that put out a over-under score, winning score?
I saw it at DraftKings, and it was 271.5, which basically is 17 under and a half if you look at it the other way. I was surprised by that. I knew it was going to be a real good score.
Boy, the weather better hold up for those people that took the under.
Absolutely.
Or not hold up, the weather better get here.
Yeah. That's one that certainly looks like it's going to probably be... I mean, the way this course sets up, how short it is with the dry conditions, and if the wind's not blowing, this can become very easily a pitch and putt. This could be a John Deere class.
Trent, I saw more eagle putts today than I have all year combined, maybe.
Well, and the way the 18 is set up, and again, the dryness, just the way... Who was it I was watching just a little bit ago? And on 18, it was Shoffley. Shoffley's not a long guy.
Right.
He had a 3-wood and he rolled it up just on the front fringe. Just rolled it up right there. Hmm. Rory.
He had a 400-yard drive, according to Nick Faldo, on one of the, not the 18th, but one of his final holes.
On 18, he hits 2-iron. Par 4, hits the green. Rolls to the green.
Unbelievable. With the 2-iron.
The conditions that they're playing in here. So just something to keep in mind. If you're looking to live bet here, bet on some birdies. Bet on some eagles because there are going to be a bunch of them.
Scotty Scheffler just made birdie and he is on his way up the leaderboard. Well, it's a fun tournament. Mm-hmm. It's great that it's on when we're on. Very seldom does that happen, at least, they're into the flow of the tournament, I guess we should put it that way.
Right.
All right. From the Big 12 media days yesterday, really not a lot came out. I didn't think. We heard from Yarmark. We heard from Bowlesby. Mm-hmm. One of the takeaways from all of this was, and there's no reporting that this is going to happen, but in order for perhaps the Big 12, and I'm sure that they won't be the only ones doing this, to maybe get that... The networks to write a bigger check. Apparently, there's some conversation about 10 conference games. More inventory, more actual games within your conference as opposed to playing a fill-in-the-blank.
Southeast Missouri State.
There you go. Now, what that does mean, sadly, I think, and maybe it was going to go away anyway, although Barta, he hit the high notes the other day in his press conference. Mm-hmm. And it's Cy-Hawk. I mean, can you realistically, if you're playing, 10 games in your own conference, some of these things are going to be casualties.
Right.
Some of these big rivalry games out of conference aren't going to be there necessarily. Is Cy-Hawk on the casualty list?
I've been saying for years, I think it's on the cutting block regardless, as we've been continuing to trend this direction. And Iowa not having that flexibility in their non-conference scheduling that... It wasn't going to go away completely, but there was going to be a gap. And maybe a gap, play 4 2 years off. Play 4 2 years off. Something like that to give flexibility for both schools to do something else in the non-conference. Now with this, and we thought the Big Ten would be before the Big 12 actually doing it, but that might not be the case if it plays out. Iowa State, they still want to play Iowa every year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
There's no doubt about it.
Right.
Who's their football rival?
It's Iowa.
Who's their conference football rival? They don't have one.
No.
Kansas State, kind of.
I think they want that wants to be. I think it's developing. I mean, it's always been good, but there seems to be more vitriol amongst the two fan bases.
But even that.
You know it could be? BYU. I mean, do you remember they played basketball a few years ago? There was something nasty in that basketball game.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was offhand, but yeah, what you say
somebody
that.
Somebody got kicked out, right?
Maybe.
Now, I'm not saying that all of a sudden makes it a rival, but
Means. If we're having to think this hard about exactly what it was,
There was something in that game.
But that's a possibility.
Yeah, maybe.
But it's difficult to manufacture.
To your point, I don't know.
Some people believe that West Virginia was going to be.
Well, they tried to make it.
And it didn't work.
Right.
I mean, you just need more. And proximity is a big part of that. How many BYU people you know in your life?
No, actually, or no of. I know zero.
West Virginia?
I know, I'd have to think, but probably zero.
But when you got an office.
But again, I didn't grow up here. So right, you're asking the wrong guy.
You had an office, and there were Hawkeyes, and there were Cyclones in there.
That's true.
Weren't many Mountaineers and Cougars.
No. Walking through the cubicles down here, didn't see a lot of that.
And you make that trip.
Saw a lot of Hawk.
You drive down to Manhattan. You drive to Lawrence. You drive to Lincoln. You make those trips, and that rivalry develops. How many people really go into Provo? Looks like a beautiful place to go. Mm-hmm. Heard nothing but great things, but at best a couple thousand. Going to be out there. It's so difficult to get a rivalry in that fashion. Yeah. There needs to be a lot, and it needs to build up. Nebraska still doesn't consider Iowa a rival. Still. You listen to the fan base, and nope. Don't measure
up. Who do they think their rival is?
They don't have one.
They're above that.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. They don't need a rival anymore.
Have they looked at the standings the last few years?
Well, they would embrace Colorado for years and years and years.
That's right. I was out there when it happened.
Yeah, and didn't matter how bad Colorado whooped their ass.
Right.
No. Because we win national championships.
That's when I lived in Colorado those years when that was going to be the forced rival. Look, back to the point about Cy-Hawk may have to go away. Bedlam's going away.
Right.
Mike Gundy said as much yesterday. If they go to 10 games, Bedlam is going to be a casualty. Why don't we play school from the SEC? We don't need that.
Yeah, because you want to get to 6 wins when you're a program early on, when you're building, or you want to put yourself in position for the college football playoff. In the new Big 12, what's more likely? You make the playoff, a 12-team playoff, at 10-2 or 12-0?
Well, yeah.
And 9-3 in the past maybe would have got you in a 12-team format. In that new Big 12, 9-3 is not going to be good enough.
No, because there's going to be a lot of Big 10, a lot of SEC.
And it's unfortunate that we continue to have the simple thinking of it's all about wins. Doesn't matter who those wins come about. Mm-hmm. If you got that zero by your name, you're going to be automatic. Well, how do you get that zero by your name? Not just run through the conference, but then your two non-conference games are incredibly easy. I think it's going to happen, unfortunately.
I hope it doesn't, Trent, because you know how I feel about this game, what the week is like as far as what it means to KXNO and what we do for a living. All right, real quick, if you want to chime in, you're welcome to do so. While we do this, I want to make sure I promote this over the next few days. MediaCom is partnering with the Iowa High School Network to bring you live coverage of the state tournament, all of them. Every single one of them, all of the quarterfinals through the championship games. They're doing all the different levels. 3A and 4A will be on MC22. They're actually going to an additional channel. MC22 Plus will carry the 1A and the 2A. So if you're a fan of high school baseball and Trent's not there doing the game on KXNO and you're a MediaCom subscriber, MediaCom will be all over this. 28 quarterfinals, semifinals, the championships, of course, will be on MC22. We've got a code word coming up. David Eicholt is going to opine. But, you know, just to dot I's and cross T's. On this 10 games, apparently it was DeAndre Kane who got ejected for a flagrant foul.
We had a caller, Aaron, that said he thought it was Melvin Edgem. But regardless,
it was a cyclone. There was something.
There was something, yes.
I remember, but I don't remember it. I remember that there was an incident, and I can remember the vitriol that Cyclone fans were apoplectic. Imagine that. They thought they got screwed.
What?
Trent, I'm telling you, they felt that way.
Did they get a letter?
And yes, and actually it's framed.
Yeah. There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them. But anyways, to your point, I don't know who the rival is. I think it's if you have to pick one,
Kansas State.
It's Kansas State.
Who would be second? Oklahoma State? They played some good games against each other.
Yeah, they have. Is it just a football question?
Just football.
Because the Kansas-Iowa State game's pretty special.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. There isn't.
This would leave a mark if it goes away. Well, it's time for another $1,000 home run. You can go to KXNO.com and enter this nationwide contest. Once you get there, there will be a pop-up box appear. And once you see that pop-up box, enter the keyword money. Money at KXNO.com. That's your chance to win $1,000. We will have another keyword coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. Let's get Jake in here real quick. Jake, what's on your mind? Thanks for being patient. How are you? Are you there, good. Jake?
I am there. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Fire away.
So DeAndre Kane got ejected for an elbow in that game. Melvin Edgem fouled out and flipped off the crowd.
Is that what it was? So it was a little of both.
So there's there was two different ones. And I think the K-State's the rival.
Yeah.
But Oklahoma State's also, I mean, every single game they play in football and basketball over the last 7 years feels like it's
true.
It's just always close.
Yep. And now with Oklahoma leaving, you know, their rivalries leave.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
They're leaving the conference. So maybe, Jake, that's what it becomes. But I think the K-State, and it's obviously you're a fan of Iowa State. Do you get the sense that, you know, the fan bases on the week of that game, they kind of get a little, you know, a little hot under the collar once each other, right?
Yeah, so I've been to Manhattan for a game, and they're the nicest fans in the world. But on Twitter, they are just, they're the worst.
Yeah.
Like, I think some Iowa State fans hate K-State more than Iowa, which is crazy.
Yeah. It's good, actually, if that's the case. Jake, thanks for chiming in. Appreciate the clarity. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Have a good one, guys.
Yep, you're the same. So, both right.
Melvin Ejim flips off BYU students. I just watched the video of
it. Did you? Yeah.
I mean, it's so innocuous. It's like a look-away flip-off. Flipping up the bird. He's not even looking at the student section. He kind of turns his shoulder and just flips the finger up. And that was it.
Leaves him with a little something.
And then he had to apologize afterwards.
The fine Canadian lad. Yeah, we're good at saying sorry.
Yes.
We'll take a timeout. David Eicholt is next. Keyword is money. Money is the keyword in the 10 o'clock hour. We'll have another one in the 11, but right now, KXNO.com. And the keyword is money. It's Des Moines Sports Station 106.3.
Now back to Miller and Condon on 106.3 KXNO. Here's Ken and Trent.
All right, Miller and Condon, welcome back to Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. For those of you who took the Tiger, Willie or Won't He Make the Cut prop, hope you took Won't. Four over through four.
I said he'd make the cut.
You were one of them.
Yeah.
You were one of them.
You know what?
Invested your hard-earned money.
If Rory wins, I'll be all right.
Yes, indeed you will at, just under 11-1. Let's get David Eicholt in here, Hawkeye Insider, of course, under the 24/7 umbrella. Hello, David, Trent, and Ken. How are you, sir?
Hey, good to be talking to you guys. Thanks for having me back. Things are going pretty well. Just gearing up for Big Ten Media Days and, you know, hopefully what's going to be a fun football season. The summer's flown by and I can't wait for it.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you. If it was the Labor Day weekend was coming up, I'd be just happy as a clam. Anyways, I want to start with you in Las Vegas because I know you were out there. Just kind of some of the highlights from your. Of course, you got. I saw you bumped into Elvis seemingly in a swimming pool. There's a whole lot of Elvises out in Vegas, as you well know. But you ran into the Hawkeye Elvis when you're out there. What were some of the highlights of your Vegas trip?
I mean, first of all, it has to be the Keegan Murray crazy game, right? One of the best summer league games I think I've ever seen. When he hit the 3-pointer with under a second left, I mean, I couldn't have had a better seat for that. But you know, I think the reality is right now Keegan Murray is putting on a show, and you know, I think if they were 2-1, he might be the favorite to win Summer League MVP because right now he's doing exactly what I think I expected him to do. I think what many Iowa fans expected him to do, and he's thoroughly outdueled a lot of the other top five picks. I think Paolo Banchero for the Magic has certainly played really well, and you know, obviously Keegan had another good game against him. But man, it's been a you know, I think Vegas is very interesting. I love the summer league. I've always told people I highly recommend going out there. You're never really bored in Vegas. Unless you're broke, then you might be a little bit bored in Vegas. But Vegas is a good time. But the NBA summer league is really good. There's a lot of celebrities watching. There's a lot of good insight. Obviously, I got a chance to talk to a lot of scouts and to do several things like that. That's always a highlight. So, no, it's just a really well-run event. The weather is beautiful, and you know, it was definitely good to get out there for a few days.
Where did you stay?
So I stayed at the Flamingo, and I also stayed at the MGM. I kind of bounced around back and forth, but I definitely stayed on the Strip.
So just one on the Flamingo, because I hear that that one might be next to be, you know, maybe gutted. I know
really?
That there's been a lot of those rumors. I stayed there a bunch over the years. I mean, the location on the Strip, you couldn't ask for anything better, right? You're right across the street from Caesars. You look out to the left, there's the Bellagio fountains. Does the Flamingo... I mean, it needs more Dakota paint, right? Yeah. Is it starting to show its age?
I think so. I think the casino floor certainly needs to be redone. I think the pool and everything is very, very well done. And like you said, you couldn't ask for a better spot on the Strip. But I certainly think they need to pour several million dollars into sort of renovating, because as crazy as it sounds, Vegas doesn't change, but it does change. I mean, upgrades are always going all over the place. I try to get out there at least once a year, and even from a year ago, it certainly looks a lot different to me, at least from the renovation side of things. So you got to keep pouring those millions and billions that they win in the casino winning to keep upgrading it, to keep people coming back.
Saw you stop by to see our friends at Circa, take any money out of Derek Stevens' pocket. You were, there a day or two before Luka Garza and the rest of the former Hawkeye crew?
Yeah, about a day or two before. I've never seen Circa Sportsbook before, so that was certainly a sight. I don't think I wanted to leave the entire day. Uh-huh. That was a sight to behold. I didn't do too poorly in Vegas, so I'll take that as the win.
Yes, absolutely. Speaking of Luka Garza, hasn't played a ton for Portland here in the Summer League team. I continue to hear... might be getting even a two-way contract might be difficult at this time. What are you hearing on the Luka Garza front, his chance to find an opportunity in the NBA?
You know, I think that's the tough part for a lot of big guys, especially after getting cut from the first team or not being picked up for a team option. I mean, the Summer League is very much like the NBA Combine. I think I remember when we were talking about, you know, Chris Murray deciding not to go to the NBA Combine, it's because it's a guard show. They chuck up a bunch of shots. I think last night, Javonte Smart for the Miami Heat had 18 shots in the first 21 minutes of the game. I mean, they don't pass the ball to bigs. I don't think Luka's necessarily played poorly. I know he didn't play in the second game, but that was anticipated. I know some people are really worried about that, but there were conversations behind the scenes that Luka would not be playing in that game, and that just came into fruition. But I think Luka's held his own defensively. I think he's been open a lot of pick and rolls, but the guards are looking to, you know, make a show out of themselves to try to land that contract. But I do think a two-way contract could be a little bit difficult at this point. But I also think Luka is well-known enough in the league, and he's shown some flashes of what he can do. So I think he can get training camp invite, depending on the team. I think that he has a shot making the roster. But it's certainly going to be an interesting couple months for Luka and where he goes from here. I mean, I've always said I won't bet against Luka. I mean, the way he's even transformed his body in this offseason, I think it's going to thoroughly depend on how well he can guard the pick and roll, and if he can make those three-pointers on those pick-and-pop situations, if he can find a role on a team.
Have you heard of are there any feelers coming from Europe, do you know? I mean, I'm sure that, you know, if it doesn't work out here, that he'll have those opportunities. Is he hearing from some of the European clubs?
I can't confirm that, but I also am not going to be surprised. I think when people look at the NBA Summer League, everybody's obviously thinking about making the NBA, but there's scouts from all over the world that stay for the entire Summer League. I mean, you got Lithuania, you have Spain, you have, you know, Russia, you have, I mean, every other league in the world is going to be there. So it will not surprise me. I think Luka, we've always said this, if Luka doesn't have a role in the NBA, I still think he does have a role in the NBA, but if he does go overseas, I think he can easily be a top five, top 10 player, if not better. Overseas, his game is still perfectly suited for that. I don't think he'd be very guardable in some of those other leagues, but it is a whole different style of play in those international leagues, a lot lower scoring. But I think Luka would find a way to dominate. But I do think that at the end of the day, just, you know, talking to people around his camp, Luka's entire focus is on the NBA. If something doesn't pan out, then I think he'll explore other options, obviously.
David Eichel joining us, HawkeyeInsider.com. David, to football and what you heard the other day, I know, had the wisdom teeth out. I don't know, was it you or Bach that went over there for the interviews? Because you're walking wounded the other day. What'd you find out, though, from hearing from the Hawkeye football players?
Yeah, no, I think it was definitely a worthwhile interview. I had some people, you know, definitely came up big in assisting me and trying to get some of that coverage out. But I think Spencer Petras is incredibly confident. I think, you know, he's come under scrutiny, obviously, for his past couple of years, despite winning a lot of games. We've seen how the offense has looked. But I think he's very excited about where this offense is going to go. I think the chemistry between him and Brian Ferentz certainly sounds like it's making a lot of progress. I think Arlen Bruce is very excited about the potential of the offense. And I think that, you know, this team exudes confidence. And I think that right now they're looking, you know, I don't want to say a revenge tour because they had a 10-win season, but they are not satisfied whatsoever about how they ended things last year. And, it's, you know, it's kind of hard not to be. I mean, they rose number two after 6 weeks, losing to Purdue and really what wasn't a close game. And Purdue at this point, I think, is becoming more than a thorn in Iowa's side, not even just on the football field, but on the recruiting trail as well. So I think that's going to be one of the most highly anticipated Iowa games of this season, quite frankly. And I think that while there's not going to be a lot of outspoken animosity, you're going to have a hard time convincing me that Phil Parker and Kirk Ferentz aren't going to really have a little bit of extra motivation for the Boilermakers this year. But, you know, I think Iowa right now, Riley Moss seems to be incredibly confident in the defense. I don't see why they wouldn't be. I think the defensive line, especially Lucas Van Ness, I think is going to be in for a breakout season. So I think there's a lot of excitement, a lot of optimism. I know, right? Breaking story, a football team optimistic in the summertime. But I do think that there's a lot of quiet confidence about where this offense could go. And I think when you look at the depth chart, it's going to come down to Brian Ferentz and Iowa's ability to just execute and simplify things.
You know, back to Spencer Petras for a second, because this time last year, I bought a lot of stock in Spencer Petras, and it's nowhere. I mean, it's lost a lot of value, but I'm holding on to it. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's wishful thinking, because I look at this defense, and oh my gosh, I mean, there's a chance they're actually better than last year, which is scary to think. I like the running game. They lose an All-American center in Tyler Linderbaugh, but the offensive line, it's not a liability. They got a really good tight end, clearly. The receivers are fine. Can the quarterback's confidence allow him to, you know, instead of maybe clutching that ball for an extra second, waiting for that perfect window to open, maybe, you know, throwing it to where he thinks it's going to come open, or just doing what he needs to do to elevate his play? I think he can. Am I crazy?
I don't think you're crazy. I think that, you know, at the end of the day, we can always speak about where we see Petras going. But at the end of the day, it's going to be all about the production on the field on Saturdays. And I've said, I don't think Spencer Petras' arm talent is going to hold him back. I think he has a talented arm. We saw the clip about him throwing a 70-plus yard bomb in the Manning Passing Academy downfield, perfectly thrown. I think when Petras gets the time, does not rush his mechanics, and really just, you know, just falls and trusts his arm and goes through his mechanics, I think he can make some really good throws down the field. I think that Iowa's offensive line last year did no favors for him, and I think that that played a big part in it. But, I mean, obviously, if Iowa throws two passing touchdowns in a span of 5 weeks, that's unacceptable on every level, especially in modern-day college football. You're not going to win games like that. But at the same time, if Iowa's offensive line can hold up, I think another big thing that maybe we haven't talked about enough is, how can Iowa's running backs pick up the blitzes? Because obviously Tyler Goodson was dynamic in open space, but let's not beat around the bush here. Mm-hmm. He really did struggle picking up some of those blitz blocks, and that's what Kirk Ferentz and a lot of other people have criticized Tyler for during his career. Can Gavin Williams and LaShawn Williams pick up on that and give Petras that extra half second to stay true to his mechanics, not throw off his back foot? And I think the other big question is, how is Iowa's receiver depth? Obviously, they're really high end with Arlen Bruce and Keegan Johnson. I have all the expectations in the world for Keegan Johnson. If he can clean up some of his drops, I think he could be absolutely dynamic this year. Can Nico Reganey have a big comeback season? And who's going to step up in replacement of Charlie Jones? I think right now depth's the biggest question. I think their top guys are going to be good. We'll see if Brody Breck can maybe get into that rotation. Then they have Sam Laporta. So if Petras can stick true to his mechanics, and if Iowa's running backs can pick up the blitzes, and Iowa's offensive line collectively gives him more time, it's going to come down to Iowa's receivers getting open and Petras' arm talent carrying the way. So I don't have the highest I'm not going to have groundbreaking expectations for him, but I certainly think, given the personnel, there has to be a step forward. They cannot be the 121st ranked offense and win 10 games. I think if they do that, they're going to struggle to win 6 or 7, because especially with all the questions in the kicking game right now, it's going to be definitely interesting.
So we know we got the Williams back at the running back spot. after what we saw in the bowl game. Feel good there.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the third running back? Who are you putting your money on right now? Two freshmen coming in. So got Hilson there from Des Moines North. Who becomes the third running back out of this group after Gavin and LaShawn Williams?
Man, that's a big question. I think right now, just based off pure physicality, guys, I mean, Caleb Johnson looks like a senior. He's got to be one of the most physically impressive running backs Iowa's gotten in recent years. I mean, that dude at 6'2", looks like a solid 215, 220. I mean, I don't want to say Derrick Henry because obviously we've seen how much of a freak he is, and I'm not putting that expectations. But just from a physicality standpoint, he is built different than I can remember any running back in Iowa being in quite some time. Maybe, what, Marcus Coker was probably the last huge, huge guy, but I don't even know if he had the height that Caleb Johnson has. But that is the guy that is physically ready to compete in the Big Ten. I think if he can pick up the zone running scheme, I think he could be a big red zone guy. I'm going to throw my money on him, but Jazion Patterson, I think, is a little bit undervalued, too, because people are fawning over Caleb Johnson, and rightfully so. So I think it's going to be an open competition right now, but I've always said if there's going to be a young guy that can break through that running back room, Caleb Johnson, from a physicality standpoint. I think you talk about a perfect scheme to player, you know, just match. I think Caleb Johnson is a perfect fit for what Iowa's system is, and I think that he's just going to be able to shed off those wimpy tacklers, break through the middle of the line. And I think right now, after the past few years, Iowa needs the guy that can run in between the tackles and pick up those hard-to-earn extra yards. I think last year we really saw the value that Mekhi Sargent brought throughout his career. Wasn't the biggest game-breaker, but, man, he was consistent in the trenches.
I want to fast-forward to November with you, David, if you would. When the schedule says Purdue, home to Wisconsin, at Minnesota, Nebraska. That's four pretty salty spots, right? Do you think the fan base would sign for 3-1 at this point? I think almost have to, right?
No question. I think it's going to depend on who the loss is to, though, because you look at those four teams, I mean, who would people least want to lose to? I mean, I'd argue Purdue at this point, especially after all they've done, the recruiting trail taking Charlie Jones and what they've done to Iowa in recent years. Can Iowa stomach losing Nebraska? I don't think so. Can they stomach losing Minnesota? I don't think so. Maybe Wisconsin, but then the question is going to be, Iowa fans are going to say, I'm just so tired of losing to Wisconsin. We need to, you know, Iowa needs to get over that hump. So I think they have to. I think they, if they could finish off 3-1, I think that'd be a very successful year, because having those four straight games, and none of them are going to be easy. I expect Nebraska to be better.
I do
but
too.
It's also going to come down to what's Nebraska's confidence level going to be like at that point in the season. We saw what happened to them last year, you know, after losing so many close games, right? That they just really folded down the stretch, even when they were still beating Iowa. Scott Frost basically made defeat after the game, after Iowa blocked, punted, and returned it for a touchdown. So I think 3-1 at that point would be very, very good for Iowa. Is that going to be enough to win the Big Ten West? I don't know. Nebraska schedule's weak. Minnesota's looking to come back strong, and Wisconsin's going to be Wisconsin. It's really going to be a very – and Purdue even, I think, has a shot winning the Big Ten West if their defense can really stack up. So it's going to be a tough Big Ten West. Now, can any of them upset Ohio State? I'm not going that far.
I'm with you. David Eichel, 24/7 Sports, Hawkeye Insider. David, thank you. I appreciate you coming on. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thank you, David.
Hey, thanks, guys. Take care.
Yep, appreciate it. David Eichel. So the bye comes on the 15th of October. After the bye, they've got, they go to Columbus, then Northwestern, then the four we talked about. At Purdue, home to Wisconsin, at Minnesota, home to Nebraska.
Not confident.
It's tough, isn't it?
As easily as you can say, they continue the domination against the rivals, and they go 10-2, 9-3. A couple of those games flip, and you're staring the barrel of a 6-6 season.
You are.
And the natives are restless,
yes,
and the offense doesn't take a step forward, and now you got a coach under fire in Kirk Ferentz in year 23.
And his kids who see.
And that's the biggest component.
Absolutely.
Because do you envision, let's say that happens.
No, I don't. To answer your question, I know where you're going, he won't.
6-6, offense stinks again, and there's nothing that would be done. There is not another
program. Unless
he
does it himself.
Absolutely.
Unless Brian takes himself out of the equation.
I could see happening.
I could too.
With Brian's personality, because he understands too how difficult it has to be on his father, and the negativity that would build. But you're right. He's not going to fire his son.
Nope. I don't think he would. I think that Brian would do it for him. Boy, mm-hmm. oh boy, Trent. Ohio State, Northwestern, and we've seen those games.
Yes.
In the past, right? Purdue, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Nebraska. What a finish. What a finish. We haven't talked about, well, before that, the Michigan game.
Wheels fall off, lose four in a row.
How about 5 of 6?
Miss a bowl game?
No, I'm not going there. Petrus
this
is too good.
This defense is too good.
I agree.
Petrus is not too good.
I know. I just thought I'd sneak that one by you.
not happening.
10:50. Again, the keyword in the first hour of the program was money, money at KXNO.com. Come back, finish up hour number one. We are not going to get Chris Williams today. The Cyclone players and head coach a little late arriving, push back the schedule a little bit. So we will, Dave Sproul will pinch it for us. We'll get Chris tomorrow. He'll recap the Big 12 media days. We're on Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3.
And iHeartMedia.
Please save them.
Condon, welcome back to Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. These guys that had early tee times this morning have really taken advantage of that. The course is changing over at St. Andrews. Very difficult to score for some of the guys that got later tee times during the day. Tiger's really having a struggle. Do you want to see him play like this?
Yeah.
Do you want to be a novelty act?
I still do.
Do you?
I just like to
Not
see him
sure
out there.
I'm sure I do.
No. I still enjoy it. I still
I don't
want to
be
him.
David Duvall.
No, because he's not. He's too important to the game. David Duvall.
No, David Duvall's, you know, yeah. Not comparing the two, what they're meaning to the game. But I don't want him to go out there. I don't know.
I just like watching him. I like to see the mannerisms and when he hits a shot and see the fist pump. And
every
and see
now
the
and then he gives you a little bit to cheer for,
right.
Or turns the clock back a little bit.
That's what I'm looking mm-hmm. for. I still want to see Tiger, even in this diminished.
Do you think he'll continue to play knowing how proud he is?
Yeah.
You think he will?
He battled to come back here.
After he did.
Almost losing a leg.
Yep.
Almost dying.
Yep.
He battled just to get to this point. And many people believed this was actually going to be his first tournament, was this one here. There are people inside his circle that say, more than anything, yeah, the Masters was great. What he was pointing to was the 150th mm-hmm. Open Championship and being played at the old course.
I saw so many pictures of him with Jack and some just sharing mm-hmm. some of those amongst the greats that have played at that course. And then you brought up yesterday there was some buzz that this might be it
there.
For him.
I heard it again yesterday in another golf podcast. That it just, nobody is going on record and saying it's going to happen.
Right. I just wonder when if his pride will allow him to continue and because he was never going to play unless he could win, right? That was
yes,
always,
yeah.
If I can't win, I'm not going to play. He can't win.
Right
the way,
now.
Physically, the way he physically. Is right now.
But he can still compete. He can still grind. And maybe, just maybe.
But he's grinding for 2 days.
Made it four.
At the
Masters.
Did. Yeah, he did.
He made the cut.
Yeah.
Grinded that out. And because of that, I think we're going to still see plenty of Tiger at the majors, a couple other tournaments.
I mean, obviously, I hope you're right.
6, 7, 8 times a year, and I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm.
It brings back those warm fuzzies.
Oh,
watching him.
Trent, so many memories, right? So many incredible memories of this guy's career. Just amazing what
How
he
much
did.
Money did Nike make on that ball hanging on the lip before falling in on the chip?
Unbelievable. Vern Lundquist in the tower. Have you seen Vern Lundquist lately?
I haven't.
Everybody gets old, right?
Yeah.
And he's
old.
He's up there. Indeed he is. All right, hour number two. We're going to have Dave Sproul pinch hit. We'll get Chris in Dave's spot tomorrow. Pick his brain on what he's hearing. Matt Campbell's going to speak at 11:35, so that will precede. We are going to do some NFL today with one of the locals, Nick Athen, catch up with the Chiefs. By the way, if you're a Chiefs fan, the daily training camp reports start, I believe it's August the 1st, with our friend Mitch Holtis. He will join us at 10:50 every single day through training camp. I love those hits with Mitch, and then weekly during the season. Miller and Condon, hour two is next on Des Moines Sports.